Drawing room over here.
You made it. Oh, come on through. Do you fancy drink? What's your tipple?
I first met Special Forces soldier Tim Thomas in a circle of veterans meeting in a Brisbane community centre to share their troubles like depression and PTSD. The Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicide had not yet begun. I was reporting on veterans' issues for the 7:30 program. One former soldier broke down in tears, and like a cat, Tim leapt up. My memory is he commando rolled towards her, if not, you get the idea, and on one knee at her side produced a box of tissues as she sobbed. It was a hypervigilant, sensitive offering of support for someone trained to kill at an elite level. It more or less tells you everything you need to know about Tim, who's dedicated his life after deployment to finding ways to overcome his and his fellow veterans' traumas, particularly in non-pharmaceutical ways. And just a warning, we're going to be talking about suicide and depression. Hello, Tim.
Andy, great to be here. Thanks for bringing me along. I remember back in 2015, I think it was, when you came down to Brisbane and you know, as a veteran, sometimes with a bit of a strung out nervous system, we get a sense of people. And you had a really good, calm, genuine energy about you, and you fitted into that space really well. So it's not a compliment. I just want to acknowledge you right now for the space you held in that space, because not many people can pull it off, and you did, mate. So well done.
I want to go back to 2004. The Australian government offered the first direct recruiting of special forces. You accepted this challenge. You made your way into the Australian Army as a Special Forces Commando. You were deployed to East Timor and Afghanistan. Tell me about what you were up to in those 6 years on your deployments.
Yeah, sure. So, like you mentioned, I joined up under the very first direct recruiting into Special Forces. We weren't particularly welcome initially, because to get into Special Forces previous to that, you had to spend 2 years in a regular infantry battalion. We had to go through about a year of kind of selection before we actually got in. There was a group of maybe 70 of us. And at 30, I was the oldest allowable age to sort of get in. I picked up the nickname Old Man Tomo, which, you know, I wasn't a fan of, but, you know, I wore it like a badge and managed to be in the, I think it was about 12 or 13 that actually got through on the very first one. And then Afghanistan kicked off, which really changed things for us, because when, you know, we got over there and we proved that we could do everything that the regular soldiers did, then people became a fan of this, you know, special, you know, direct recruiting into Special Forces. And through that time, looking back on it, I could tell that I had an amount of undiagnosed PTSD, but the way we dealt with it is you drink a bit extra, you take extra painkillers, you take extra pills, and you keep going. And that's how we managed our pain. And then, you know, the connection to your brothers, that is, you know, the thing that made us as powerful as what we were, because I've really sort of found that, you know, us humans can handle anything. We can handle pain, we can handle discomfort, provided we have a really close connection to that human next to us. But then, you know, when you get out and you have that deep connection severed, you know, even the small things can seem hard.
What did that look like for you? How did that manifest for you? You've returned to Australia. You're no longer with the Special Forces. How did it manifest for you?
Well, it was hard for me to enjoy anything, Andy, because, you know, my mates were fighting overseas, and here I am deciding what I have to have to lunch. You know, it was not... It was like, what's the point? Like, the hardest thing I've got to choose today is what I'm going to eat for lunch. And it didn't, I felt disconnected. I was getting angry. I could do my work, but imbalances were showing up within, you know, my family. Like, I couldn't speak to my wife before I drank, you know, half a carton of beer. And there was like, I could do my work, but outside of that, parts of my life were just sort of crumbling, and I was becoming, alcohol was an easy go-to, and I've always tried to help others, but even in that space, I think I was using helping others as a bit of a pain relief, a bit like taking Panadol for a broken leg. It was wonderful helping others. But what people didn't know was I was doing some incredible work in the veteran charity space, doing things that no one had done before. But behind closed doors, every 6 or 7 weeks, I'd have to hit the bottle for like 3 days to clear my own head. And I kept on telling myself, no, I'm on a mission right now. My mission that I gave myself was we'd lost about 40 guys in Afghanistan on the ground, but we'd lost many more times that to suicide. And my mission was to save 40 guys from suicide. And I did that actually within a year. One or two guys a week would come up and say, you know, do you remember this conversation? Well, guess what? That stopped me. I had everything in the car ready to go. The reason I was effective in that space, Andy, was because I didn't just have lived experiences. I saw there was two things that the system wasn't seeing. And the first thing that the system doesn't address that I see is pain. It doesn't matter if it's physical or emotional. People will experience pain for a certain duration. It doesn't matter if it's a veteran or a human. We're all humans here. Civilian, you know what I mean? The pain will get to a certain duration or intensity that it transforms from just being pain, because you and I can handle pain if we feel connected to others. That pain then transforms into loneliness, isolation. I'm the only person going through it. And it happens without us even knowing it. And it's that isolation that's the killer, because it's really hard when you feel that no one's got your back, because everything's a threat, because everything is a threat. We're social mammals. When I'm in the herd's got my back. But when I'm outside of the herd, you know, I'm stressed out. I'm not sleeping. I don't know who to trust. And so the first thing that needs to happen is breaking a person's isolation, which we did very effectively in the programs I helped create. But then the next step is getting them out of fatigue, because if you've been in pain for a duration, you've experienced loneliness and isolation. That's very fatiguing, being in that space. So getting them out of fatigue, it's only then are you ready to sort of take on, new healing modalities.
I want to talk about the Royal Commission into Defence and Veteran Suicides in Australia. It really sort of exposed the over-medicalisation, treatment system, if you like, of returned soldiers and veterans, the sort of extensive prescription of drugs used to treat PTSD. Yeah. This is something that you've had lived experience with also alongside your fellow veterans. Do you think that the ADF needs to be, do more to implement more holistic treatment measures? I mean, I think about your diving and the mammalian breath response that you've seen firsthand. How effective is that in treating veterans?
Well, look, I had some incredible results. All my programs that I set up, the effectiveness was measured on how much we improved the quality of sleep. Mammalian dive reflex, stress response reduction, breath work, these sorts of things are never spoken about, never offered to. And you're talking to someone who lost 6 years of his life for pills, because when I finally stuck my hand up and go, hey, I need help, the doctor goes, no worries, here's a bunch of pills. And I'm like, well, is this what getting help looks like? And so I did it. You know, my wife was threatening to leave me at the time. And then, 6 years later, no one told me how incredibly hard it is to get off these things and the cost. No one told me that, I could change my... So to answer your question about, yes, there is no doubt not nearly enough attention given to other non-pharmaceutical options, and I know there's a time and a place for pharmaceuticals. They're definitely there to benefit us, but no one tells you the cost of taking them, and no one tells you how hard it is to get off of them when you're in that space, because you're just hurting and you don't want anything worse to happen, so you just shut up and swallow.
If you just joined me on RN Drive, I'm with former Australian Special Forces Commando Tim Thomas. We're discussing post-traumatic stress disorder. And I want to talk about the power of breath work. And, you know, when people are in a stressed response, something that I know that you think and talk about a lot. You know, I think about when I was first taught how to read the news 10 years ago, and Anton Enos, this incredible newsreader at SBS, taught me that when everything is out of control, the one thing you can control is your breath. Now, there's no equivalence to reading the news on television to the sorts of situations you've been in, of course. But I think that's what you mean about the power of breath work. How did it help you with your PTSD?
Well, I just want to back up what you just said. The reason why breath work is so powerful, and I'll explain how it helped me. And what I discovered was that, you know, as living organisms, we were breathing before we had thoughts in our head, before we had words in our mouth, and before we had any concept of time. And that ancient wiring still lives inside of us. So when we dive into that with proper breath work, that then brings us back to the time before stuff got complicated, before it outranks your thoughts, it outranks your words, and that allows your body to be back in control. For thousands of years, the Chinese have been saying, control your breath, you can control everything. And so when you get into your breath work, that brings you back to that, you know, it bypasses all your racing thoughts. It bypasses, you know, pretty much every stress response. And, you know, science is starting to catch up to how breath work can, you know, make a massive impact on our whole nervous system. And I didn't discover this until a mate of mine several years ago said, you know, I had a cold sore, I was going to buy some cold sore cream. He says, no, I'll show you this breathwork technique that'll help get rid of that. And I'm like, well, you know, if it saves me $20, and then I did it and it got rid of it. And I'm like, why didn't I do this earlier? And so now I've just been sort of diving deeper and deeper into the breathwork side of things. Obviously, you know, when I was running programs with the veterans, we would you know, do breathwork techniques to do the free diving and putting the face in water to trigger the mammalian dive reflex, which we all have. It's a reflex that happens once our heads are submerged. And a lot of these veterans were saying, you know, I've had all these voices in my head for years, and when I take a deep breath and put my head underwater, they just disappear and I feel at peace. And it was so simple, and there was no drugs, no pills. It was just, you know, given a safe environment where they could trust another human being and they could allow themselves to experience how awesome, you know, our body wiring is.
It is simple, as you said, but it also needs to be taught. I feel like if you've not been instructed properly about how to meditate or how to regulate your breathing, you sort of don't know what the benchmark is. You've
exactly.
used all of yeah. this work with veterans and PTSD and some of your own personal experiences to work up this app called Breathwork in Bed. What does it do?
Well, basically, it guides your breath. Now, our breath is voluntary and involuntary. It happens when we're not thinking about it, and it happens when we are thinking about it. And I made that app because when I'd lost everything, like this was post-PTSD, you know, I was divorced, lost my access to kids, and my brain was completely cooked. And I'm a breathwork coach, but when I was completely cooked, I didn't want to breathe, you know, so I needed guidance. In that space, I remember looking at my left thumb and saying, Tim, you can take one breath. Just take one breath. And I drove that thumb into my chest and I went, great. Okay, Tim, take two breaths. You can take two breaths. And I took two breaths. And then I got to five, just get to 10 now. And then somewhere between 10 and 20 breaths, my headspace changed from highly stressed to it's okay. You've got this. Keep breathing. And I'm a breath coach, so I then started thinking how many people out there are struggling to sleep, struggling with stress, and if they simply had a guide to guide them into breath so they can actually get sleep, then that would be a viable option and stop the idea that, well, for me to to change my state of being, I need to take a pill, because that up until that point was what I used to do. I'm feeling stressed, I'll take a pill. I'm feeling cranky, I'll drink a lot of alcohol. But to have the option of breath as a layered approach, no one told me that. And God is my witness, I don't want any other Australians to experience life without those options at their fingertips.
Tim, always a pleasure to catch up with whatever it is you're up to these days, and you're continuing your good work in helping veterans and their PTSD and trauma. Tim Thomas is a former Australian Special Forces Commander. He's the founder of Breathwork in Bed. Great to talk to you, Tim.
My pleasure, Andy.
And if this conversation's brought up any issues for you or you need assistance, Beyond Blue is 1300 224 636. Lifeline is 13 11 14. Or there's 24-hour mental health support for Navy, Army and Air Force personnel and their families. Open Arms is 1800 011 046.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park.